Okay, good morning, everybody. Good to see everybody here. Thank you for coming. I'd like to thank our sponsors for the whole year, for 2023. The Shirim are sponsored, Le'ilu Nishmois Brana Bas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman, Zichron Livracha, and we're very grateful for that anonymous sponsorship. If I could remind you, please, to turn off your phones, and they'll then be silent and attentive during the Shirim. Okay, last week we started on a series of Shirim, which today I think we will see we're going to take the road less travelled. Last week we spoke about honey. Hopefully there were some interesting observations. Today we're going to talk about milk and honey, honey and milk in our case. What could there be to say about milk? You know, we all know what milk is, we know our fleishigs from our milchigs. So as I say, hopefully this will give us a little bit more breadth on the issue and will take us forward into other topics. For example, next week, these are issues we've never really dealt with. I'd like to deal with the whole question of chalav akum and chemat akum and the issue of milk and supervised milk and whether Rav Moshe Feinstein's sack is relied upon and where and how. Milk which is approved by the FDA or the equivalent in England or whatever, and we can go from there to cheese, we'll go from there to fish and milk, we'll go from there to meat, synthetic meat. There's lots to talk about, so you maybe we won't spend too many weeks on it in case you want to talk about something else, but we will spend a couple of weeks on this, and today we're having a look at milk. So where's the first mention of milk in the Torah? The answer is
milk and honey.
No, before that, Avram Avinu, looking number one, v'yikach chema, he took some butter, Avram, for his guests, v'chalav, and he took some milk, uben bakar, and he took some meat, asher asa, they made the cow, v'yitin lifneim, and he gave it to the guests. Now, obviously the first question is, why is he serving milk and meat to his guests? For which there are many, many, many answers, and which we'll get to one at the very end of the shiur, but that's the first time we see that there is milk mentioned in the Torah. Before even milk and honey, we get another pasuk which praises Yehuda, the bracha that's given to Yehuda by Yaakov, number 2. I'm going to go through these first couple of pages very quickly. I'm not dealing with all of the pasukim here. Chaklili einai miyayin. So his eyes are darker than wine. Ulaven shinai michalav, and his teeth are whiter than milk. Rashi explains, why is this a praise? Mirov chalav, he has so much milk. Yehuda has so much milk in his portion in the land. Shehi ba'ad so mir'etov, there's such great grazing land on his land. Le'edrei son, for all the goat herds. And we'll see that milk in the Tanakh, although we very rarely drink goat's milk, we sometimes have goat's cheese, but I'm not sure that people have goat's milk standing in their fridge. In the Tanakh, much of the milk that they refer to is actually goat's milk. It's not necessarily cow's milk, although of course it can be both. And if you see, milk and honey comes in number 3. But what is milk and honey? What's chalav u'dvash? So dvash we talked about in detail last week. Let me give you a little inkling, a little insight into Rav Zalman Margolis. Look at a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, number 4. So in Shir HaShirim, it talks about the idea of shatiti yeini im chalavi. The lover talks to the beloved and says, I've drunk the wine, I've drunk your milk. What are they talking about? So the Targum Yonason, in number 5, translates, I've drunk your wine and I've drunk your milk as nisuch chamar sumak v'chamar chiver. I've received, as we know, that there's an allegorical translation of Shir HaShirim, even though it's, you know, you could translate it literally. Rashi doesn't, and famously the Art Scroll chose not to include any literal translation of Shir HaShirim in their book, which was quite controversial. Do we need more air on? Is it hot or is it good? I'm fine. I just need to. Okay, good, fine. So here it translates that God says to the Jewish people, I've received your libations of red wine and white wine. It's talking about the libations on the top of the Mizbech. Interesting, do we ever think about whether it's red wine or white wine? So according to this, Rav Zalman Margolis says, Chalav Udvash is talking about white wine. Chalav is white wine, and Dvash, of course, is date honey. Which makes a lot of sense, that Eretz Israel is praised for its wines. Just go to the hundreds of wineries all over Eretz Israel, and as you walk into the winery, go, Chalav, 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 and the people will say, what are you talking about? And they say, Harbech Chalav, white wine. Israel is praised for its Chalav, which may well be white wine. There is another approach, which I brought you at the bottom and the top of the page, the idea that Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash, if you look at number 8 at the bottom, Targum Yonason on the Chumash says, Ara de Pereha Shmeinim Kechalav, that the fruits are lush and juicy like chalav. And therefore there is this idea that Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash, that the chalav is not necessarily talking about a milk product, but it's talking about the gorgeous fruits. And there is actually a very nice connection. If you look here in number 9, this is Vidui Maisa, when the farmer says in the 4th year, in the 7th year, he makes a declaration, I've given all of my trumot and masrot, now please God give us a brocha. Look at the psukim, number 9. Hashkifam me'on kodshecha. Look down from your holy dwelling place, Mina Shamaim, Uvarech et amcha et Israel, bless your people, Israel, Ve'et adama, bless the land, Asher natata lanu, Ka'asher nishbata la'avoteinu, Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. And there the Mishnah in Maaseh Sheni analyzes each part of that request. What are those brochas? This is quite interesting. I brought the whole thing because it's very interesting. Number 10. Hashkifim ma'on kachacha min ha-shamayim. Look down from your ma'on. Now in modern Hebrew, where's a ma'on? A ma'on is where you take your children or grandchildren when they're very little. It just means a safe dwelling place. But the Ma'on Shamayim says the Midrash, or says the Mishnah rather, Asinu Mashi Gezata Aleinu. We did what you asked us to do. Af'ata Asay Mashi Yiftachtanu. So you do what you promised to do. Hashkifa B'Ma'on Kachacha. Look down from heaven, Minas Shamayim, Uvarech Esamcha Yisrael, with what? B'Banim U'Banot. Why is this request for a bracha of Banim U'Banot? So there's a beautiful piece of Torah which I often share as Sheva Brochas. I don't remember where I first heard it. I think Rabbi Kimchi, I heard it from him, but he got it from somewhere else. Why do we say Shehasimcha Bima'ono at a Sheva Brochas? We say there's now, as we make these brochas for a new Chatan and Kala, there's a Simcha in the Ma'on. Why is there a Simcha Bima'ono? Because the Ma'on, we see from this Mishnah, is the place that God stores the neshamas of Banim Ubanot. So the bracha, Hashkifim Ma'on Kachacha, please send us down some of these children. So we're saying to the Chatan and Tekala, today there is a simcha in the Ma'on, because this is a new opportunity for Banim and Banot to be sent down to this world now that you've got married. Beautiful. If you ever need a off-the-cuff Dvar Torah for a Sheva Brochas, it works every day of the year, it's always good to know. But our interest is the end part of the Pasuk. And the land, what's the bracha on the land? Betalu matar b'vlados v'heima, and with dew and with rain and with lots of animals as well. Kasha nishbata l'avoteinu eretz zvat chalav udvash kedei she'titein ta'am b'pirios. So they give the fruit special flavor. And people often say, my parents always say that the fruit in Israel tastes better than the fruit, you know, in Chutz La'aretz, which has been sitting on a ship for who knows how many months. If you can get the really good fruit in Chutz La'aretz, not the stuff that they necessarily sell in the shops, but the really good stuff, then it's amazing, amazing. Okay, fine. Enough of the chalavas, the fruit. And I put here in 11, 12, and 13, lots of references to milk as goat's milk. And Rashi, number 13, brings a Gemara, Zvat Chalav Udvash, HaChalav Zav Min HaAzim, Izim. The milk is dripping out of the udders. We'll get to the udders soon. But here of the goats. And the advash is zav min hatzmarim min hatainim. The honey is dripping out of the dates and dripping out of the figs. And he's channeling there in Gemara in Ksuvos, which talks about Rami ben Yecheskel, that he traveled to Bnei Brak, and he said there was fig honey dripping and milk dripping, and he was wading through this milk and honey almost knee deep, or says ankle deep, on his way around Eretz Israel. There's so much plenty. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so far no big surprises. But let's now get to the main question, which is, why is milk kosher? First of all, why is milk kosher? Milk should be treif. Oh, let's have a look right now. So look at number 14. So look at this Gemara. This year is actually very parallel in many ways to last week's. Because you remember last week we asked the question, why is honey kosher? And we brought from the same daf Gemara on Brochus, a discussion about honey. Now we'll see a discussion about milk. Number 14. Kedatanya. Shimon Hamsuni. I started with Shimon Hamsuni because this is a beautiful Ashkafic point. Shimon Hamsuni hayadorish kala et ve'et shebetorah. This Gemara comes up in a few places. Shimon Hamsuni, it's called other things in other places. Every time it says the word et, he said that comes to include something. Something else. Kabeid et avicha ve'et imecha. Chazal say, includes not only your parents, but your parents' spouses, your step-parents as well. So he said, every et in the Torah comes to tell us something extra. When he got to the et that goes, et Hashem Elokecha, you have to fear God, but it doesn't say God, it says et Hashem. So what could go with et? Nothing could go with, Nothing could go with Hashem. So Piresh, so then he withdrew. He said, no, I reject my thesis. So Amr Eloi Talmidav, so the Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, kol etin shedarashta matehei alayhem. What about all the other etim that you darshaned? You explained hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of divrei Torah based on the et, and now you don't like it anymore? So Amr Lahem, famous line, kashem shebikal kibalti schal ala drisha, kach ani mekabal schal ala prusha. The fact that I got schar for creating all this Torah based on the et, now I've realized that my thesis is incorrect. I'm now going to get equal schar for withdrawing every single Dvar Torah that I gave based on this. Ad Shiba Rabbi Akiva, so Rabbi Akiva came along, vilimeid, and he learned the following. He taught the following: Et Hashem Elokecha Tira the Rabbis Talmidei Chachamim. That this goes, this Et Hashem, what goes with Hashem? Those who fear Hashem, Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, so he included even that Et. So I've heard this a few times from Rav Shalom Rosner on his Daf Yomi Shir, and he got it again from somewhere else, I don't remember exactly. If I could remember everything that I heard from Rav Rosner in his Daf Yomi Shir, I'd be the planet brain of Torah. But he says, what did Rabbi Akiva know that Shimon ben Amsuni didn't know? Meaning, Rav Shimon ben Amsuni got to Et Hashem Elokecha, I have to withdraw. Rabbi Akiva says, no, it means this. What had he seen that Rabbi Shimon ben Amsuni hadn't seen? The answer is, he'd seen Rabbi Shimon Ha'amsuni. He'd seen that a Talmud Chacham of that caliber is prepared to retract his whole doctoral thesis that he's been working on for years because of intellectual integrity and authenticity. He goes, oh, that must be what that et comes to include. Et Hashem Elokecha, it comes to include Talmud Chachamim. It's a very nice idea, but that really is the prelude to the Gemara we're looking at, which is another et. Fourth line there. Amalei Rav Achab Reidu Ravan Rav Ashi. So Rav Achab Reidu Rav Ashi says to Rav Ashi, Elame Atam. At this point in our discussion, he says, Talmud Rabbonon mi gamal gamal. The rabbis have a special limud as to why camel's milk is treif. By the way, camel's milk is something of a delicacy. You should know. Down in the Negev, with the Bedouin, they make ice cream from camel's milk. It's actually called gamalida. Okay, and I hear that it's very tasty. It's completely treif, obviously, but it's fine if you're Bedouin or if you're an Arab. Chocolate with camel's milk, I'm sure it's quite delicious. We'll get to how delicious treif food is in a minute. Okay, so we learn from a pasuk gamal gamal to include the milk. Reb Shimon me et hagamal. Here's the et. Reb Shimon learns the extra. The milk is treif from the et hagamal. Says the Gemara, one second, why do I need special psukim to teach me that camel's milk is treif? Don't I have a general principle? Kala yotze min atame tame, kala yotze min atar atar. Anything that comes out of a treif animal is treif. Why do I need special psukim? And he even brings another limit here. Halav hachi hava amina, would I have said without these, chalav de behema tame ashari? Would I have said that milk from a treif animal is permitted? Mashana ma adik netanya, why is it different from a brice that we bring? Hatameim. It's a little different from what we said before. It's not kala yotze me'atame tame. Here we have a special posik in Vayikra that says not only is the animal treif, but its juice is treif, its secretions are treif, its sediments when you cooked it, it's all treif. No, says the Gemara, it's treif. I need a special posik for camel's milk. Why? Salkadaita chamina. I might have thought, hoil de behema tahira namachidashu. Since all milk should be treif, even kosher animal milk should be treif, so I might have thought, well, milk is obviously an exception. We drink milk, because even though we shouldn't drink milk, in theory, da'amamar, because why is it a chiddush? Dam ne'er kavanase chalav. Because what is milk made from, says the Gemara? Milk is made from blood. I brought you a footnote here, in terms of cows. Most of the products of the milk is actually from the blood that passes through the udders. For every liter of milk, 500 liters of blood have to pass through the udders to kind of secrete out. This shira is not for the faint-hearted, just a warning real advance. Okay? And therefore, when a cow produces 60 litres of milk, 30,000 litres of blood have to be circulated through its mammary glands. So blood and milk, Gemara says, and also science says, are very connected. Blood is treif. So I would have thought milk should be treif. Kaven de chidush hu, and since there's a chidush that milk is kosher, wow, I would not have thought it. Behema tamer na milishtri, I might have thought that even camel milk is kosher. It's an exception. So all milk is kosher, even treif animal milk. Kamash malan, no. I have to bring you a special posik to say, even though kosher milk is kosher, which is a chidush, treif milk is still not kosher. Okay, let's go on a little bit. So it says the Gemara, Hanichal amanda amadam ne'ekavanase chalaf. This is fine for the view that says that milk really is derived from blood. But there's another view that says, no, that's not where milk comes from. Elalamanda ama, in terms of mother's milk, which we'll get more to in a minute, Ibrahim it's parakin, that the mother's body kind of goes into breakdown a little bit during pregnancy, and her limbs disjoint. The einav shechazeret ela ad esrim va'arba chodesh, and her body only gets back into shape. I've never, on a personal level, had a baby, and I don't really want to, but it's definitely a major trauma to the body. And only after 2 years does the woman's body get back into some kind of normal shape, and therefore, for the time that she'd normally be producing blood and menstruating, etc., it's formed into milk, meaning it's a completely different process. The mother's body is making milk; everything's different. My iklamema, what are you going to say? Because their blood and milk are not so related, so why might I have thought milk was treif? Itzterich, I still need a special pasuk to tell me camel's milk is treif. Saka daita chamina, because I would have thought, hoyo v'leke midi da'asi michai v'sharia rachmana. Nothing ever comes out of a live animal that we're allowed to eat, because it's coming from a live animal. V'hai chalav, and this milk, ki eva min hachayhu. This is eva min hachay. V'shari, and yet it's mutter. Therefore, you would have thought, oh wow, milk is an exception. Maybe camel milk is also mutter. Kamash malando. What's going on here? What is it? It's not really eva minachai. There's two kinds of thing minachai that's treif. Eva minachai is when you cut off a limb. So this is not a limb, it's liquid. Or basar minachai. Well, it's not basar, it's milk. So the answer is, the Mephoroshim explained, it's not that it's eva minachai literally, it's yotze minachai. Why can't I eat a live animal? What's it missing? The answer is shechita. It only becomes kosher once I shecht it. Therefore, it's walking around as a treif animal until I shecht it, and now it becomes permitted. So anything that comes out of a treif animal is treif. So I would have thought the milk is treif. But actually, the Torah says milk is kosher. By the way, I would have thought that about eggs as well. Why are eggs kosher? And the answer is, again, because the Torah specifically says that Jewish people are allowed to eat eggs. Are non-Jewish people allowed to eat eggs? That's a good shaila. We talked about that once before. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he suggests that maybe non-Jewish people are not allowed to eat eggs. Only Jews are allowed to eat eggs. He has this discussion. Why does that bother me? And they don't care because they're not asking me shailas either. If I want to be an omelette chef in a hotel, am I allowed to serve omelettes to the non-Jews? Or can I only serve omelettes to the Jews? Because maybe it's Lifnei Iver. If a non-Jew is not allowed to eat omelettes, then I can't serve them omelettes. Don't worry about it. Non-Jews are allowed to eat eggs in the end. But I'm just saying it's raised this issue as Evi Minachai. Okay, so where does it say in the Torah that milk is kosher? What's the exception? Oh, it says it's milk is kosher. Which pasuk would you use? Oh, so the first thing it says. So the Gemara goes through a few options. Last three lines of number 14. How do I know that milk from a non-kosher, from a kosher animal is indeed kosher? If you say, well, excuse me, the Torah prohibits milk and meat. So if it prohibits milk and meat together, doesn't that imply that apart they're okay? Otherwise, why would I prohibit them together? He says, no, it doesn't imply that. Maybe, we know meat is kosher. We know that because it talks all through the Torah about shechting animals and eating korbanos, etc. But I wouldn't have learned that from Basav Achalav. Maybe I would have said, Asav Achilu Mutu Bahano, that you're allowed to get benefit, but you're not allowed to eat milk, drink milk. And Basav Achalav together, you're not even allowed to get benefit. Basav Achalav Bahano Nami Asa. So the answer is no. Like David said at the back, Ibo is Eima Mehacha Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. Says the Gemara, "V'iloy deshari." If it hadn't been mutter mishtabach la krab imidid lachazi, would the Torah have praised Israel for something that you're not even allowed to eat? Now you'll say, "Well, chalav is white wine, maybe." Certainly not according to this Gemara. V'ibosei mehachor brings another pasuk where Yeshayahu explicitly tells the people to go and buy milk. I mean, why would I go and buy milk if I'm not going to put it in the fridge and drink it? Okay, so it's clear that milk is kosher. But what comes out of that is very clearly that I might have thought milk was trade. It's a chidush that milk is kosher at all. Now, over the page, to page 3. Is milk milchik? Yeah? Is the Pope Jewish? What's what? Okay, so we'll get to a number of different examples. So we're going to look at now 5 or 6 types of milk that come up that are actually parav, even though you might have thought they're kosher. And I'm not talking about almond milk. We'll talk about almond milk, etc. That's obviously parav. It's made from vegetables. But have a look here, number 16. Shulchan Aruch, first of all, says, what does the pasuk say? Loisav ashel gedi b'chalev imo. Don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Number 16. Gedi lav dafka. So the Shulchan Aruch says, it's not only a gedi, it's not only a kid, a goat. Duhu adin, sure, that also applies to an ox, seh, a sheep, aiz, a goat. It's not only the gedi, but it doesn't apply to a chaya. If I take milk from deer, or milk from a giraffe is a kosher animal, everybody agrees. The only reason we don't eat it, there's a kind of myth out there that we don't know where to shecht it. That's not true. You've got a very big area that you could choose from to shecht it. The reason we don't eat it is A, because you can't get it to lie down in order to shecht it. B, it's very expensive. And C, apparently tastes horrible. But Rabbi, I bow to Rav Slivkin on all of these issues. And you can go, if you like, to the Masorah dinner. You can pay your $700 or $800 or whatever it is, and they will serve you half of the food that's on the sheet, if that's what you're into. So, but milk from a chaya, from a wild animal, is not milchik. It's kosher, but it's not milchik. It's osamid rabbonon for obvious reasons. It's milchik drabon, I should say. Look at number 16, second line, gimel. Really, mahadrin milk and meat. If you really want to do the avera in the fullest way, you have to use kosher meat and you have to use kosher milk. If you use treif meat or treif milk, it's treif, but it's not milk and meat. Ironically, the only place in the world you can really eat McDonald's cheeseburgers and do the issa d'oraita is in Israel, because in Chutz La'aretz they're using treif meat. And therefore, it's treif, but it's not meat and milk, mahadrin, as it were. But in Israel, if you go to a treif McDonald's, it's really kosher meat, and it's really kosher milk, and therefore you really have basa v'chalav on every level. We do everything better in Israel, okay? Aval basa tahara b'chalav tameya, but if you cook in treif milk, or basa tameya b'chalav tahara, or if you cook with treif meat, mutarim b'bishul b'hano, you're allowed to prepare those. Now, that's actually very interesting. If you want to be a chef in a restaurant, in a non-kosher restaurant, what are the restrictions that might halachically prevent you from being a chef? So one of them, you're allowed to cook non-kosher food. I can cook pork and I can cook shrimps and lobster. There's no problem with that. I just can't eat it. I can make it for my guests. But can I cook meat and milk? Yes or no? So there's an isser of bishul. So here you have a little bit of an opening that if you're working in a place where there's treif meat and milk, then maybe that's not the Isser, well, that isn't the Isser d'oraita, and maybe there's a heter to cook it. I'm not answering the Shaila. You can go and ask a Shaila. There are people who work in culinary academies, and they have to ask these Shailas. V'af b'achila eina asa elamid rabbonon, and there's an Isser d'rabbonon to eat milk that is not technically milchik. Aval dagim v'chagavim, but when it comes to fish my brain's gone. Locusts, okay, and we had a whole shir on locusts, remember? About 2 years ago? If you don't remember, I can repeat the shirim. It's good. I always wonder how long to give us a gap between when I repeated it before, said it before and now. The age of the audience. So I'd say 8 or 9 years based on the audience, but still, this is all new. Okay, fine. But when it comes to milk, fish or locusts and milk, ein behem isa afilu midrabbanan. Says the Shulchan Aruch, there is no problem eating fish with milk. Now, you're going to tell me, but aren't there some Sfaradim that don't eat fish and milk? My daughter, when she was in Shirut Lumi, was in a flat of Dati Ot, but everyone else was Sfaradim. So my daughter was there mixing her tuna with her cottage cheese, you know, and eating it with great glee. And they called her the Goya, because she's the one that eats milk and fish. Okay? So we'll have to see where that comes from. I'm not going to do a whole shir on it, but that's clearly mutter. And then the Ramot comes in and says, what about vegetable milks? These days, he says, we make milk from almonds. You're allowed to cook that with chicken. Since chicken is only fleishik derabbanan. So chicken and almond milk is absolutely fine. But if you're going to cook meat, like steak with almond milk, you should leave a few almonds on the table so people can see that the milk is almond milk. Why? This is the famous Maris Ayin example, that people are going to think that you're drinking real milk, you're having real butter, whatever it is. You have to leave a label, something on the table that indicates that it's paraf. Until the point that people actually realize there's so many dairy or non-dairy, I should say, creamers, non-dairy butters, etc. No one's going to even think it's Maris Ayin anymore. But that's a separate issue which I'm not getting into now. So the first example of milk, which is at least on a Doraita level paraf, is milk from venison. Again, I'm not sure where you can get that, but if you can get that and it's kosher, then it's only milchik midrabbono. What about mother's milk? So you mentioned here, number 17, says the Rambam, afal pi shechalav adam mutter, even though mother's milk is kosher completely, asrucha chamim legadol liyanek be'oisem min hashidayim. A grown-up is not allowed to nurse from actual mother's milk from the breast. But if she wants to express the milk into a kli, and you want to use it as a recipe for something, then it's absolutely 100% kosher. No problem at all. And the Shulchan Aruch says, and it's also parav, number 18, you're not allowed to cook in mother's milk. We play Maris Ayin. We're worried about Maris Ayin. So like we said with the vegetarian milks, we're not allowed to do it just because it looks weird and people are going to make mistakes. But if it falls into the food, bottle the ain't tarashim. There's bottle, it doesn't even need to be bishishim. Mother's milk is always going to be fine. So you can't make recipes lechatchila using mother's milk and meat, in case you were thinking of it, but if it fell in your food, then that's fine. Okay, fine. Now it starts to get interesting. We see that there are three times in the psukim. And I brought you the three psukim, 19, 20, and 21. Why three times? Now, there are many drashot that are made on why the three times, but here's a drasha you may not have come across. Number 22, b'chalevimor, says the Gemara in Chulin. What three milks are exempted from this posuk? B'chalevimor, v'lo b'chalev, chalav zachar, milk produced by a male. Not milk which is found in a shechted animal. Not milk from a non-kosher animal. None of those are milchik. Milk from a male, milk found inside an animal when you shecht it, and milk from a non-kosher animal, all of those, at least on a Doraita level, are parah. So what's going on here? Where do we find this? And we'll see, some of these are a little bit esoteric, but some of them are very, very lamaisa. So first of all, let's just talk for a second about milk from a male. Do male mammals produce milk? Yes, they do. It's not so common. It is with human beings, it's something called galactoria, where males start to produce milk, or women who are not pregnant start to produce milk. But in some mammal species, I did a little bit of research on this, especially bats, then the daddies do a lot of the work nursing the children as well as the mummies. And the male bats and the female bats all produce milk. And they do that. Can a man just like start producing milk? So Rashi says, yes, it can happen. Number 23, go over to page 4. V'lo b'chalav zachar, shehaya lo chalav, a man, let's say, who had milk, muat min hadadid, a little bit of milk comes out from his breast, kagoin im nishtane, if something happens to him, v'hayo lo dadim, and he suddenly starts to have, maybe it could be because of estrogen, that he has a hormonal imbalance, he starts to produce milk. And there's actually quite a famous case, people talk about this case, in the Gemara number 24, which gives a lot of hashkafic twist to this. Look at 24, Tana Rabbanan, Masa be'echad, it happened with one fellow, Shemesa Ishtoi, his wife Nebach died, v'hinicha ben liyonik. He left them a son that needed nursing. And he had no money to pay a wet nurse. What's going to be with this guy? The naselo nes, a nes happened to him. The niftechu lo dadim, he grew breasts. Kashnei dadi ish, just like a woman. The henik beth benoi, and he nursed his son, and the child was saved. The rabbis disagreed. Amar Rav Yosef, barei, come and see, kama godel adam zeh. How great must this person be? Shenaselo nes kazeh, that such a thing happened to him. He had a child, and he grew breasts, and he was able to milk the child. That's amazing. Amalo Abaya said, no, it's terrible. Adarabba, on the contrary. Kama garua adam zeh. How on low level this man must be. Shenishtanu lo sidre bracious. That the only way that this man could feed his child was for God to overturn the natural order and do a miracle. That's terrible. We do not want that to happen. We don't think that miracles are a good thing. What should have been? God should have helped him to get a job and earn a living. And hire a wet nurse. That way, if he'd have been on a high level, if he'd have deserved it. But he was actually very low level that a miracle happened to him. There's a lot you can do with this Gemara hashkafically about the purpose of miracles, whether we're interested in miracles, whether we believe that miracles are a positive thing or a negative thing, supernatural miracles. The Rambam goes out of his way on many occasions, including in the Maam of Tchias HaMesim, to say that almost every time you see a miracle in Tanakh, it is completely natural. That God only will resort to supernatural miracles in the most extreme cases. Which is actually very interesting, because then you've got to go through the whole of Tanakh and try and work out why he says that and what is it about the miracle that he says is natural. Don't forget, when the Yam Suf was split, it didn't just say, and God looked at the Yam Suf and it split. What happened all the night before? Ruach Kadim. There was a wind that blew the whole night before, so the people could say, but it's not a supernatural miracle. Meaning, what's miraculous about it? That it happens right now to these people, just when they need it to cross the water. But it could be a natural phenomenon, that the wind blows in this way, and the sea goes up like this, and people can walk through. Yeah, could happen. It just doesn't happen much, but it happened then. You look perturbed.
Doesn't the scholar disagree on that?
Yes, lots of people disagree, absolutely. I'm just saying that this Gemara is a good example of when we feel, as a Jewish nation, that miracles are not what does it for us.
Wasn't it also dry land?
Okay, good. So it was maybe more so that it was dry, but you could say, well, if the hot wind blows and it dries out the land, etc. It doesn't make it less of a miracle, it just makes it less of a supernatural miracle. Yes, sir? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I apologize. Where is the Gemara? I don't remember. I want to say it's in Shabbos, but I you're right. That's a mistake. I will clarify and next week I will let you know. It's an oversight. Yes, great. It's an oversight. It was. I will try and let you know. I'll send you an email. Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, fine. What about male milk lemaisa? So I'm not getting into the whole thing. But number 25. Look for a second. Says the Shulchan Aruch, hamu'ushan v'hamu'vushal v'chametz averia. If you cook meat and milk, if you smoke them rather than boil them or fry them, or you cook them in the hot springs of Tveria, ein loikin alav. That's not doraisa. That's derabbanan. V'cheinam avashal basal b'chalav zachar. And if you cook meat in male's milk, patur, it's darabonon. Ve'en loikin ala chilasai, and you don't get malchus for it, mishum basa v'chalav, it's not really basa v'chalav. But is it mutter at all? Then the Ramah comes in, v'chalav zachal lo mikre chalav klal. The male's milk is actually not called milk at all. What, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Meaning we just said before that milk should really be treif, because it's yotzim in achai. But because it's milk, it's an exception. But male milk is not milk, so maybe it's treif. Meaning it doesn't actually help you that it's not milk at all. It might make it worse that it's not milk at all. The Shach says no. The Shach says it could be that male animal milk is a problem, but male human milk is for sure not a problem, because mother's milk is parav, father's milk can't be more milchic than mother's milk or more treif than mother's milk. Yes? Yeah, okay. So people could have, you know, hormone treatments that cause their body to react and change in different ways. But that's a different shaila. Meaning, you know, you might have a case. I don't know whether people who take estrogen start to produce milk and whether that's what they want to be able to do. Most people who want to be, they're a man, they want to be a woman, they don't specifically want to lactate as a woman. They just want to be a woman.
Well, that's the opposite case where a woman becomes a man, but it's still
and still able to choose, would that be called male milk? Okay, so that's a good shayla. So 99% of poskim say, maybe even 100%, that if a person has a gender reassignment, then halachically the gender doesn't change. The gender doesn't change. Even if they have a medical procedure that, you know, interacts with their body in some way. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to sit on this side of the machitza as opposed to the other side of the machitza. That's another question, which is not the same question. But yes, I don't think a man who used to be a woman who produces milk, halachically I think it will still be mother's milk. Okay, let's move on to something a little bit more common. Or is it? Which is udders. Anyone here ever eaten udders? Yes. I did a little bit of YouTube research on this, and it actually looks quite delicious. People who are preparing udders, and you know, people have said, you know, you should try it, and I said, oh, come on, pull the udder one. Actually, we'll see, it's not so straightforward. Number 27 says the Shulchan Aruch, v'chein ha'mavashel bada b'chalev mesa, milk found in a dead cow. Obviously, when you shecht a cow, the udders contain milk. Again, it's not like a bag that has milk in it. The meat itself is imbued. There's milk absorbed into the flesh of the cow. Says the Shulchan Aruch, patur. Again, it's the Rabbanon. It's not really milchik. It's not really basa v'chalav. Nevertheless, here everybody agrees, and the Shach says in 28, the chalav shchuta, when it comes to the milk of a shechted animal, kaimalan we paskin the midrabbanon mi'ha'asa. It's definitely the Rabbanon. It's definitely prohibited midrabbanon if you as milk, meaning it's kosher, but you have to call it milk at least on a drabbanon level. What do you have to do to an udder in order to make it actually kosher to eat? Or kosher to cook with other meat. Look in number 29. Says the Gemara in Chulin, HaKachal. This is the sugi of Kachal. I remember when I was doing Smicha. Kachal, eating udders, is one of the most complicated sugyot in Basa V'Chalav. What you have to do to this udder to make it edible, in Kashrus terms. So the Mishnah says, Kairo, you first have to tear it to get the milk out. Moitze et chelbo, and try and get the milk out. Loikar, if you didn't tear it, eino over alav, then it's not doraisa still, it's milk drabonon. And the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda, Kairo shesi va'erev, you have to crisscross it and cut it in different places. V'tachu b'kaisel, and then press it up against the wall. And you can find lots of videos, I'm sure I didn't go that far, of people, you know, preparing udders. Bottom line, if you go over the page, I'll just show you the Shulchan Aruch, basically 32 and 33, the Sfaradim do eat udders, but the Ashkenazim don't. That's the bottom line. So if you go to a Sfaradi restaurant, and you get Murav Yerushalmi, and you're brave enough to ask what's in it, then it's possible that it could contain udders if they prepare it in the right way. But if you go to an Ashkenazi restaurant or with an Ashkenazi heksher, basically Ashkenazim do not eat udders. Kachal. I don't know whether in modern Hebrew they say kachal as well. But I'm not sure. But I'm actually more interested on the hashkafic angle here. Because I don't think any of us are going to eat cow udders, although if you're Sfaradi, you go to a Sfaradi restaurant, there's a possibility. And I think they do serve that at the Masero dinner as well. But have a look in number 30. Number 30 is fascinating. Because this sugyo in the discussion of udders brings in another question, which is, what if I want to eat something that tastes really treif? I love the taste of treif food, but I don't want to eat treif. Is it okay to find kosher food that tastes so treif? Or is there a problem with that?
How would we know?
Oh, Bali Tshuva. We're going to see. Number 30. Look at number 30. Amra le Yalta le Rav Nachman. This is a beautiful Gemara. Yalta says, the wife of Rav Nachman, to her husband, Michti kol ha'os the da'asalan rachmana. It's true, indeed. Everything that the Torah asked, okay, sharlan kavase. There's an equivalent experience, which is mutter. You're not missing out anything by being a halachically observant Jew. There's always another angle or outlet. And she gives him an example, some lists. Asalan dama, you're not allowed to eat blood. But sharalan kavda, but you are allowed to eat liver, as long as you kasher it right. And liver has a different consistency. What are you eating when you eat liver? You're eating koshered blood, basically. Whatever needs to be taken out of the liver in terms of kashrus has been taken out. What's left is still chemically blood. If you did a chemical analysis on it, even a piece of steak, which is kosher, and you like your steak rare, and you squeeze it in the red stuff, that's not halakhically prohibited. Either you say it's blood which is kosher, or you say it's not blood at all, but chemically it's the same thing. So she says you could eat liver, and that's fine. Neither, a man and a woman are not allowed to be with each other when the woman is menstruating, but there's dam tohar. Dam tohar is, we don't do this today, but on a Torah level, for a certain number of weeks after a woman gives birth, once she's gone to the mikveh after 7 days, 14 days to be tamei yoledet, for a boy, 7 days, for a girl, 14 days. According to Torah law, if she continues bleeding, which she's likely to do for weeks after the birth until her uterus resets, that's called dam tohar. That is actually mutter for the man and the woman to be together, even though she's effectively, she's menstruating, but it's actually kosher because the Gemara says dam tohar. Now, we don't do this today. We assume that women are nida until they're able to get clean in the normal way, and they don't. But she says, in theory, the Torah gives you an outlet. Chelev behema. Let's say I have a yearning for suet. I want to eat the fat which is prohibited on a behema. Chelev chaya. I could eat the fat which is on a chaya, which is mutter. I could eat the suet of a venison. Chazir. What if I want to eat pig? Mocha de shibuta. There's a certain fish brain. Sheldag, says Rashi. And it tastes just like pig. Girusa, this treif bird. Lishna de kavra. There's this fish tongue that tastes exactly the same as this. Eshes ish. What happens if a person has an insatiable desire to have relations with a married woman? It's asa. But there's always gerusha b'chai bala. But what if the woman gets divorced and her husband is still alive? It's kind of used to be an Eshes ish. If you want the thrill, then that's permitted. Eshes ach, what if a woman really wants to be married to her brother-in-law? That's incest on a Torah level, even though it's not a blood relation. Yivama, there's always yibum. Kutit, what if a Jewish man very much wants to have relations with a non-Jewish woman? Eshet yifat tohar, there's always the theoretical possibility. What's going on here? This is such an interesting Gemara. So what is she after? What does she want? So she's leading up to the question. She says to her husband, "Ba'in in lemechel bishra b'chalav. I want to eat basa b'chalav. What can I do?" So Amalahu Rav Nachman letabchi. So Rav Nachman said to his cooks, "Zvike lakchali, make us some cow udders, because that's basa b'chalav. That's the taste of basa b'chalav without the prohibition of basar b'chalav." What's going on here? So I brought you in number 31, the Eitz Yosef. The Eitz Yosef on this Gemara says, because at the end of the day, the Torah realizes that people have Yetzer Hara, and sometimes the Yetzer Hara can be incredibly strong. Now, most of us are able to overcome our Yetzer Haras. We're able to control ourselves, but there are people, and you can never judge anybody else's Yetzer Hara. Just because that person has a Yetzer Hara different from yours, you can't say, well, why can't you get a grip on yourself? People have, Lailenu, addictions. So, well, why can't you just stop? It's not that bad. You don't realize what it's like. If this person has an addiction, this person doesn't. They can't control it in the way that the other person can. So says this Gemara, there's always an outlet, in theory, at least. I mean, an Eshes Yifat Tohar is not something which is going to happen on a daily basis, but it's very interesting that even somebody whose Yetzer Hara is so strong, the Torah never said there's something that you have to do that you can't control yourself and not able to do. It's actually a very interesting hashgafic point. And I brought you in 34 a tshuva of the Chashukei Chemed. Again, Rabbi Rosner got me a little bit more into the Chashukei Chemed. This is Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, who is the son-in-law of Rav Eliyashiv, brother-in-law of Rav Kanievsky, Yibadim in Chaim L'Chaim. And Rav Zilberstein writes beautiful tshuvas about very unusual and interesting cases based on the Daf. He has them on the Daf Gemara. And he writes a tshuva about Russians that made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union. And back there in the Soviet Union, they used to eat pork because they were very assimilated and they didn't keep kosher. But now they're Baalei tshuva, and they can't eat pork, but they really, really, really miss it. And they want to eat something that tastes like pork. And they found a kosher food supplement, or substitute, I should say, that tastes exactly like pork. Crispy bacon, whatever you fry it up, tastes exactly like. Is there any problem with it at all? And he answers, no, there's no problem with it at all. And he brings a question from the state, He brings a question from the Chida. The Chida, 300 years ago, was asked by someone, you know, according to the Midrash that says that when they ate the man, if you were a tzaddik, you could taste of anything you wanted it to. What if you wanted it to taste of bacon? Was that okay to have? And he says, yeah, it's fine. Because if the food's kosher, why do you care what it tastes like? It can taste like anything you like. And therefore he says, and he brings the Maharal, that says that the only reason that the prohibited food is in the world is so that when you eat the permitted food, because the food's there to be permitted, at least you had a choice. You had a halachic choice to make. You didn't eat that one, and you did eat this one. But really, the focus is on the kosher food. It's there to be eaten. Ah, it tastes like pork. That's so that you can get the schar for not having eaten pork and eaten this instead. So it's not like the main thing is the pork, and this thing is like some sketchy, you know, substitute. The main thing is the food which is permitted, because it's there for you to eat. And the reason the pork exists is so that you can have the choice and not do the Avera. Yes? Maris ayin is an interesting question. So some poskim say that you can't invent your own maris ayins. Meaning if Chazal didn't, I mean, it's clear from Chazal that they didn't have a problem with this. They didn't say, it's permitted, but it's really maris ayin. No, they said, if you eat this. And again, maris ayin, it's not going to be maris ayin, because it doesn't look as though you're eating something treif. It looks as though you're eating like a fish tongue, but you know that it tastes like a treif bird, so it's no maris ayin there. Oh, kosher pork. Bacon flavored. Did they write that on these kosher snacks? Bacon. Okay, so is that maris ayin? So again, a number of posts can say that you can't. Some say you can, you know, create new maris ayins, but many say you can't. Are you allowed to go into a restaurant to use the bathroom? Are people going to think you're eating in a treif restaurant? So many, many posts can say, no, the Chazal never said that was maris ayin. They never said it's maris ayin. If you need to use the bathroom, you need to use the bathroom. I remember I once had to walk from Hancock Park in Los Angeles to Pico Robinson, which is a good walk on Shabbos afternoon, like 3 hours, whatever. And of course, in the middle, I needed to just pop into a bathroom. I went to a shop, they wouldn't let me. The only bathroom I could find was a KFC. So Kentucky Fried Chicken, Shabbos afternoon, go in to use the bathroom. Of course, just as I walk out, like there's like 100 Beis Yaakov girls walking past. Like, good Shabbos, good Shabbos. Kacha Zeh Chaim. No, take my yarmulke on. There's more of a maris ayin if you take your yarmulke off. Because no one walks in looking in their Shabbos clothes to Kentucky Fried Chicken on Shabbos afternoon because they want to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know? When I was a lawyer, I used to have a shayla when I ate in all these treif restaurants with clients, and I used to have, I've mentioned this before, you know, my slice of cucumber and half a tomato, whatever it is. Should I keep my yarmulke on or take it off? I was told by all the rabbonim I asked, keep it on. Because it makes it less of a maris ayin. Nobody keeps their kippah on and then goes to a treif restaurant. Yeah. Anyway, so this is a very interesting idea of the food that tastes treif. And if you look at number 35, this is a very interesting Gemara. At the end of the Kiddushin in the Yerushalmi, look at number 35 at the bottom. Number 34 is the Chashukei Chemid that I mentioned. Rabbi Chizkiya Reb Cohen B'Shem Rav said the following. This is in the name of Rav. Atid Adam Liten Din V'Cheshvan Al Kol Masherat Eino. In the future, you will have to give account in Olam Haba for everything that you saw with your eyes, below Achal, but you chose not to eat. Why are you denying it to yourself? God put it into the world to be eaten. Okay? If you didn't eat it, you'll have to give account for that. And it says, Reb Leza Chashash Lahadash Shmosa. The Reb Leza said, I'm worried about this statement of Rav. And he gathered together prutas, and he kept finding new things to buy. Oh, I've never had that fruit before. I've never had that food before. Let's make sure that I don't have to go to Olam Haba and give account for that. And some of the unfortunate say he wanted to say Sheachianu, but the main point here is that you're not allowed to deny yourself. Or are you? There's a whole discussion about the Nazir. Is the Nazir a Kaddish or is the Nazir a Chayta? And the Gemara says both. On the one hand, the Nazir is a Kaddish because he's, you know, realized or she's realized that they need to withdraw from certain things to raise their level. They may be imbalanced in certain ways and this is going to help them. On another level, they're a Chayta, it says. They're a sinner because God put wine in the world to be drunk rather than to be refrained from drinking. And the Rambam goes more on the line that you're not allowed to refrain. That's a Chayta. The Ramban is more of a Kaddish. The Ramban says that the Nazir is called a Chayta because he stopped being a Nazir. It would have been better to continue being Nazir. You had a question?
Yeah, what about vegetarian?
Okay, good. So the question, why you're a vegetarian? Vegetarianism is actually built into the Chumash to some degree because the human beings were created as vegetarians. It's very clear that Adam and Chava were created as vegetarians and only later was Noach permitted to eat meat. And that's why there were many of the Talmidim of Rav Kook Rav Kook himself was a vegetarian during the week, but ate meat on Shabbat. But his Talmidim, some of them were strict vegans, the David and Rav David and Nazir, Rav Shai Yishuv Cohen, they were strict vegans, and therefore the concern that Rav Kook had with vegetarianism was only that people, rather than raising animals to the level of humans, they'll bring humans down to the level of animals. And there are all, there's a whole shiur that we had on that some time ago. Yes?
You mentioned addiction before. Now, here, I work with them. It can be for a limited period of time, but all the research, this is where we gain sometimes from some outside sources. That,
sure.
Once you're alcoholic or once you're addicted, most people cannot, after 2 months of being out of it, go back to what he did.
Okay, so Baruch Hashem, there are treatments that we can use, but you can't judge another person's Yetzer Hara. Go over to page 6. There's no Hebrew sources here, because I just listed, and you can read it in your own time. When we're on the topic of milk, so we've dealt with male milk, we've dealt with milk in a dead animal, which is udders, etc. What about milk from a non-kosher animal? Now, obviously, I'm not talking about a non-kosher species here. Obviously, pig's milk and camel's milk, we saw how we learned out that it's not kosher. What about milk from a nevela? You kill an animal, someone kills an animal in a non-kosher way. They just shoot it. So obviously the milk's treif. The animal's treif, the milk's treif. What about milk from a treifer? You kill an animal and you work, you see, you shecht it properly, and you see that the animal's a treifer. It had one of the simane treifers, tarfas, that there's one of the, and the Gemara lists a whole list of them in Chulin, 18 of them, the Rambam brings 70, that we have a tradition this animal would not have lived for more than a year with this illness or sickness or whatever, even if today we can keep the animals alive by other means, still the list of simane treifas are as they were, and therefore if the animal is a treifa, we can't eat the animal. Good. So you shecht an animal, you check the lungs for siuchot, if there are abrasions, and you check the brain, and you check all the different places where they could have been simane treifas, and if it's treif, you sell it off to a non-Jew. So this raises a very, very important question. How are we allowed to drink milk ever? If I milk a cow, how do I know if this cow is a treifa or not? Now, if I kill it and shecht it and check it, I can tell. But that's too late now for the milk. So how do I know? Why isn't milk all treif? So famously, the Gemara says, because it's a roif. Because the vast majority of animals are not treifus, and we can, you know, when we do kill them, we see what proportion, what percentage are treif and what percentages are not. So Chazal say there's something called a ruba deleta lekaman, reta kaman, a ruba deleta kaman, meaning a majority which is not in front of us. What does that mean? There's a ruba de isa kaman, and there's a ruba deleta lekaman, meaning I could have a majority that is in front of me. I have a piece of meat, and I have 10 butcher shops, and the piece of meat came from one of the butcher shops, and I'm not sure which it is. None of the butcher shops are kosher. One of the butcher shops is treif. Now that's called a ruba de isa lekaman. I mean, we have a clear majority empirically in front of us. It's 9 verses 1. But a ruba de lesser lekaman, which is a statistical rive, is that I don't have specific examples in front of me. But I know from my research that X percentage of cows are treif, and therefore I expect in a milk that X percentage of the milk will come from treifers. Since the vast majority of cows are kosher, I don't have to assume that this cow is a treifer. Okay? However, once you hit what's called a miyut hamatsui, if there is a significant minority of animals or whatever it is that are not kosher, then even though there's a majority that are, then you have to check if you can. Now, we're familiar with this in terms of insects and infestation. If I have a fruit that is hardly ever infested, an apple, I have apples. I do not have to check apples for insects. Apples are very rarely infested. If I find that a certain percentage of the apples are infested, then I have to start checking them. What is that percentage? A miyut hamatsui. So most of the posts can say around 10%. Some say a bit more, maybe up to nearly 50%. That's very lenient. And some say even less, even if it's 5%. But let's say 10%. So are there a miyut hamatsui of cows? Are there more than 10% of cows that are treifers? The answer is yes. So should I check? Yes, if I can. But I can't, because the cow's alive. So I can rely on the roif. So I can milk the cow. Once I kill the cow, I have to check. But if I'm dealing with a live cow, I don't have to check. So it comes along certain points. I only have 5 minutes, I just want to finish. Famously, Rav Shechter. Now, Rav Shechter said later that he didn't mean this to be a statement for the whole world. He meant this as his personal hanhaga, his personal chumrah. But comes along two potential problems. First of all, some poskim say, well, maybe today the majority of cows are treifas. Why? Because we keep poking them with needles and putting hormone injections here and these injections there. And cows are now poked like pincushions from, you know, a very early age. And maybe actually you can't say anymore there's a roif. So most people say that's not true. Statistically, that's not true. There still is a roif. But there's another problem, which is as follows. Think about this. If I have one cow, two cows, three cows, four cows, then I can assume that each of these cows is kosher and I can milk it and drink the milk. I asked my great-grandmother, alayhi shalom, once, what was her earliest memory from living in Lithuania? She said, I remember when I was a very small child, I asked my mother for a glass of milk. We went outside and milked the cow, and she milked it into a glass, and I drank it. Okay? I don't recommend this, but she lived till she was nearly 100, so didn't do her any harm. However, what happens if I have 10 cows? And I milk them, and I mix all the milk together. Okay, so with each individual cow, I can assume it was kosher, because there's a roif. But now I have 10 cows worth of milk, of which statistically, let's say 10% is treif. So I now have 10% treif milk in my milk, statistically. Can I still say that it's kosher? Because 10% is way, way, way more than bottle of shishim. Shishim is 1.6%. So now the way that we milk, it's not like the old days where you go to the cow and you milk the cow. Now we have thousands and thousands and thousands of cows, all milk with milk, which is milked together, and they've at least 10%, maybe 15% of the milk is statistically treif. So how can we drink any of the milk when you know statistically that the milk is treif? So that's the question. It's actually a very good question. Okay, so it's not bittul, there's no bittul. Right, right. How do you do this? So most poskim are lenient on this issue. And they say basically, first of all, many of the things that we call treifas are chumras. They're not real treifas. So the actual percentage of cows that are really, really, really treif is probably lower than you think. And others take other approaches, which is we don't reassess the milk. It's a different kind of roif. But I brought them on the top of page 7 as well. And it seems that the Shulchan Aruch basically is not machmir for this. It says, for example, that if you make cheese using milk from a cow, and then you shecht the cow, and you find it to be a treifa, is all the cheese that you made from that cow now treif? Interesting question. He says, yeah, if it's something that you think might have existed when you milked the cow, then yes, the cheese is treif. But says the Rambam, but if you have 60 cows, then you don't have to worry about the milk. Okay, so what does 60 cows help me? If it's still like a miyotam matzri, there's still 10% of milk which is treif. The answer is obviously he's not worried about that. Okay, so we're not worried about that. Rav Shechter's chumrah remains exactly that, which is a chumrah. And even Rav Shechter says, I didn't intend to impose that on other people. But he doesn't eat milk products, as far as I'm aware, on a personal level. He'll use old milk substitutes. He's halachically lactose intolerant, basically. Okay. The last case, which is fascinating, is the Ben Pekua. What is the Ben Pekua? We'll get a chance to talk about this a little bit more, but in the last 5 minutes, let me introduce you to this case. Look at number 37. Let's go to 37 on page 7. Hashoichet et abehema. If you shecht an animal, the nimseit kashera, and you find it, it's kosher. It's a kosher animal. It's not a treifa. Umatzaba uber, but you find an embryo inside it. It's pregnant. Ben Ches, whether it's 8 months gestation, cows also have a 9 month gestation period. Check that. If it's an 8 month embryo, Ben Chai, whether it's alive or whether it's dead, because we don't expect an 8 month embryo to live, according to the halachic perspective, or Ben Ches Meis, or if it's a full developed embryo but it's dead, Mutar ba'al achilasa ve'ein toin shechita. I don't need to shecht this embryo, even if it's alive. Even if it comes out alive, because the shechita I did on the mother will cover every single part of the mother. It covers the mother's legs, covers the mother's arms, covers the mother's lungs, covers the mother's everything. It covers the mother's embryo. So this embryo has a din of shechted. So if it's dead, I don't have to do anything more to it. It's me. I just have to kasher it in the normal way. What if it survives? What if now I can keep these even 8 month gestated embryos alive? I now have a cow walking around, which is dead cow walking. It's a shechted cow. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if it's a 9 month embryo, then once it puts its feet on the ground, then it's osa midrabbanon. to eat it without shechita, because people are going to get confused. Because you have like 18 cows and one of them is a ben pekua and the others are not. No one's going to remember and they're all going to mix in. Some of them need shechita, one of them doesn't. Once it sets foot on the ground, it's you have to shecht it. But if it's an 8-month embryo, we don't expect it to live. So even if it puts its feet on the ground, then it doesn't need shechting. Now today, we can create entire herds of cows from 8-month embryos. B'nei Pekua. Okay? And halachically, all of them have a din of shechted. And in fact, I brought you on the bottom here, there is a Rav here, Rabbi Rabbi, who is quite famous, who was trying to suggest that he wanted to create what he called super kosher meat. Meaning there's no problem, there can be no problem, he said, with this, because it's already shechted. And all these animals, they just need a bop on the head, and then you can eat them. They don't need, there's nothing to go wrong with the shechita. The mother was not a trefa, they can't be a trefa, etc. So this isn't even theoretical. I brought you in number 38, where Adas is brought by the Ozarua, that Rav Shriragon had B'nai Pekua in his herd, and one day he wanted to serve one at a wedding, and he just chopped its head off with an axe, and he brought it and served it at the wedding. Didn't need to shecht it. I mean, this is not even, not so, maybe it's, you know, it was very good with an axe, maybe. So, Ben Pekua is a whole question as to whether it's legitimate or not legitimate to put this meat onto the market, which we'll mention when we talk about the synthetic meat. But the interesting question is it fleishik? Now, why would it not be fleishik? Because it's meat, it's fleishik. Okay, good, so let's say it's fleishik. But is its milk milchik? Because this is milk that you found in a shechted animal, like the udders, right? So even if this bat pekua grows up into a milk cow, maybe all the milk is paraf. And in fact, the Meshech Chochmah brings this down as a suggestion for Avram Avinu. Going back to Avram Avinu, when he served the calf and he served the milk, he says, don't worry, it was a bat pekua and the milk was paraf, so don't worry that he served it with meat. The note of Yehuda doesn't like it. He says, come on. No Rishon ever said any time that the milk of a bat pekua was paraf. And you just came up with this idea? Someone should have said this before. Whatever. There are other answers to Avram Avinu, who was before Matan Torah. He served the milk first and then the meat. His guests weren't Jewish. His guests were Malachim. Meaning it's not a problem for Avram Avinu. But there is a possibility that the milk of a bat pekua might also be a paraf milk option. But obviously, Lamaisa is never going to make it through the Hechsherim because it looks like milk and it tastes like milk. And it feels like milk, and therefore it's probably milk. Anyway, we're going to get further into this. On the synthetic meat question, all these genetically modified stem cell meats, do you think that the manufacturers want them to be paraf or meaty? Meaty. Because they want them to be meat. And if you say that they're paraf, then people are going to say, oh, it's not real meat. And they want them, therefore, they want the rabbonim to say that they're fleishik. We'll get to that when we get to it. But today we've said what we need to say about milk.